Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.
The U.S. government says Alex is no longer eligible to adjust because of Carly or for any other reason unless he leaves the country and accrues at least 10 years' time outside of the country and then goes through another application process with all sorts of...
Which could take years.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't understand why they can't, you know, give him the option to stay. Because, I mean, all they're doing is taking a perfectly good household and ripping it apart.
This is St. Louis on the Air. I'm Sarah Fenske. Carly Garcia's husband, Alex, had been living in Poplar Bluff, Missouri when he moved to St. Louis 3 years ago. He was a married man, a father of five. His wife and his kids are all American citizens, but he is not, and immigration authorities told him to report to be deported. Well, instead, he came to St. Louis, and he sought sanctuary in Christ Church United Church of Christ in Maplewood. He's been living there ever since. And joining me to talk about it is his wife, and that is Carly Garcia. Carly, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And we're also joined today by Sarah John. She's the executive director of the St. Louis Interfaith Committee on Latin America. Sarah John, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Sarah, can you give us the short version of a very complicated legal saga? What got Alex Garcia to the point of ICE seeking his deportation 3 years ago?
Yeah, so thank you. That's a, as you said, a complicated question. But I think the simple answer is that Alex, like millions of others, has entered this country more than one time, or in their initial attempts, right, like crossed the border, got deported, came back, removed. You know, it is seldom, in my experience, sort of like a one and done sort of situation, mm-hmm. which could take us down to a longer conversation about how we have constructed border policy and laws since the early 90s and arguably before that. Mm-hmm. But so Alex came to this country almost 20 years ago, and you know, shortly thereafter, I think met Carly and fell in love, and they were going about their life. And after they got married, they did, you know, they followed all the right steps. They were doing everything the right way. They found an attorney. They were trying to figure out what paperwork they needed to file so that Carly could adjust Alex's status. Mm-hmm. Since Carly's a U.S. citizen. And so then they had an unfortunate conversation with Nicole Cortez, who is the their attorney, is also the co-founder of the MICA project, the Migrant and Immigrant Community Action Project. And she kind of said, look, Alex is in a situation where, like, again, like millions of others, mm-hmm. where he has what's called the permanent bar, right? So based on U.S. law, because he has been removed and re-entered, the short answer is the U.S. government says, well, Alex is no longer eligible to adjust because of Carly or for any other reason if unless he leaves the country and accrues at least 10 years' time outside of the country and then goes through another application process with all sorts of...
Which could take years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think it's also helpful, Sarah, to mention or to think about what going back to Honduras looks like. And we've spent some time last week looking at what has happened in Honduras in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some of your listeners are much greater experts on Honduras than I am. But there has been a coup d'etat. There has been a repressive, aggressive, violent dictatorship. And going back to that country, in the place that Alex grew up and the way his family, some of his family still live there, doesn't seem to be a viable option for him or mm-hmm. certainly not for their five children.
So, Carly, it all feels very hopeless, but claiming sanctuary, what Alex did, this is such a bold move. Do you remember when you first heard about the option where he would claim sanctuary and basically take up residence inside a church?
Well, when I first heard about it, I was very unsure of it because, you know, to me, it was a huge move that I was scared of. You know, I was going to be depending on people, strangers that I've never met to, you know, to help keep my husband safe. Mm-hmm. So sanctuary was in the beginning not an option for me. And then I got to thinking, you know, what is the option? You know, the only other option other than sanctuary was for him to leave the country.
Mm-hmm. And to be gone for 10 years, not just that he'd have to leave. I mean, that's a long time.
10 years isn't even guaranteed. I mean, there's not even a guarantee that he would be able to come back, whether it be, you know, he survived going back to Honduras, or rather our government allow him to come back in the 10 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not even a guarantee if he was to leave the country that he would be able to come back to us. Mm-hmm. And having 5 children, I mean, that's not, we can't do that. We can't afford to travel back and forth to Honduras, you know. Travel expenses would be outrageous. And I mean, he's a perfectly good husband, a perfectly good father, hardworking man. And, you know, he pays his taxes. He, you know, helps the community when he can. And it's just like, I don't understand why they can't, you know, give him the option to stay, because I mean, all they're doing is taking a perfectly good household mm-hmm. and ripping it apart.
And Carly, when he came up here to move to move into this church in Maplewood, did you ever imagine that he would still be there living in that church 3 years later?
Not at all. Yeah. I did not think it was going to take this long.
You were hoping that there would be a lifeline.
Yes.
Sarah, tell us this idea of taking sanctuary in a church. I remember when I first heard about Alex's case 3 years ago, it was hard to get my head around. It was like, wait, a person moves into a church and at that point the federal government doesn't move in to arrest them. What are the roots of this movement of saying, hey, here's how we're going to handle what we feel like is an injustice?
Well, I also was not an expert, and nor do I consider myself to be an expert on this very ambiguous, rather thin protection. I think what's helpful when we look at sanctuary, what's helpful to understand is that in some ways, what we're doing is holding up, using this tool as a way to hold up the moral dilemma that we are confronted with in how immigration policy is functioning in the United States today. So what that sort of, to get into a little of the specifics, what it means is that there's an internal memorandum from Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So this came, the current governing memo is from just a few years ago under the Obama administration. There have been several memos of this kind, at least since, I think I've heard since the early 90s. But basically the memo says, to immigration agents, you should try not to conduct enforcement activity in sensitive locations. And then it enumerates 5 sensitive locations, which includes places like schools, hospitals, and houses of worship, right? And so I think some of us could look at at least this most recent sensitive locations memo and look at how you see Congress having been debating comprehensive reform and other immigration reforms for, 15 years at least, and not coming to any solution. And looking at the executive branch being able to say, okay, well, what do we do to sort of stand in the middle, right? Where yes, it needs to be from Congress. What's our responsibility in the meantime? Let's try to at least keep people safe in some of these sort of origin story of democracy, right? The right to freedom of speech, the right to worship, right? Think of those sort of like the constitutional founding principles, right? So people should be able to worship without being afraid that they were going to be prosecuted or persecuted while they're there. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the sensitive location sort of like tool behind it is, just an internal memo. I will also just share briefly that the memo is about 3 pages long. So as you can imagine, that does not provide a lot of detail. Mm-hmm. It's also just a memo, right? So we have seen prior to Alex entering sanctuary, and certainly in the last 3 years, ways that the federal government has sort of chipped away at those slim, already slim protections. And like many other memos, those can change. And so I think what many of us feel and believe, and certainly when you meet the people of Christ Church, this is also an expression of their held, deeply, profoundly held beliefs about how we need to treat other people. And so offering sanctuary and standing with Carly and Alex in this moment of injustice is inseparable to how they live into their Christian values.
We're talking today to Sarah John. She's the executive director of the St. Louis Interfaith Committee on Latin America. And we're also joined today by Carly Garcia. And her husband, Alex Garcia, has claimed sanctuary in a Maplewood church. That's in order to resist deportation to Honduras. Carly, I understand you recently moved to St. Louis along with your kids. Was this an effort to get closer to Alex, to be able to see him more frequently?
Me and three of our children moved to St. Louis. Two of our children are still in Poplar Bluff living with their mother. But my move to St. Louis was due to my health. The separation of Alex, the stress driving back and forth every weekend. That's, you know, 3 hours one way.
Does it add a different kind of stress to be so far from home and be with people that you didn't know well prior to this whole situation?
It is. All of it has definitely taken a toll on me and my health. The stress has been really hard, mostly because, you know, I've never left Poplar Bluff. So leaving everything I've ever known to come here to St. Louis was really hard. Very welcoming. St. Louis has been good to me and our family. I have very, very huge thanks to the St. Louis community and the support that they have shown for our family. But, I mean, it has been very hard for me, but we did move up here to try to help eliminate some of that stress. Hmm. But, I mean, either way, it's still stressful because we're still not together, you know. We've always been a blended family. It's not a, you know, the wife does this and the husband only does this. You know, we're a partnership. We're equal. You know, everything I do, he does, and vice versa. And that's how we raise our kids. And right now it's been like just a single parent household. And, and it's been really hard and it's been really stressful. And I've been trying to find ways to juggle, you know, being a single mom and trying to find time to work and now homeschool my kids due to the pandemic. You know, my kids can't go to school. So I'm homeschooling a first grader, a second grader, and tutoring a ninth grader.
Yeah,
and,
that's,
you know,
a lot.
I'm doing all of this on my own. And, you know, it would be a lot easier if, you know, if we could have Alex home and helping me and, you know, just not even having the fear of what's going to happen next from one moment to the next. It's been very stressful. My doctors have been telling me, you know, you need to eliminate stress. You need to try to take it from somewhere. And, you know, I've taken it from about every area I can without just, you know, not being able to do anything. And it's really hard.
This is such a hard case, and it's so hard for your family to be separated in the way that it is. And Sarah, I know you had a week of action in this case. That was all last week. What were you hoping to accomplish with those actions?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple goals that we tried to accomplish in the week of action. I think the first is really just to honor the sacrifice, the very public sacrifice that Alex and his family have made in order to fight for what's right. And so I think being able to just surround them with affirmation and love and comfort and support at a time that none of us thought we would arrive to, right? 3 years is and now over 1,100 days, right? That's far too long. I think that the sort of second component of the Week of Action is to sort of bring people into the, dare I say, campaign side of things, right? Getting Alex tanking sanctuary sort of was not the campaign. That's a tool so that we can fight for justice, which looks like Carly and Alex having the power and capacity to make decisions for their own family and live the kind of life that they want to live, right? Mm-hmm. Not being told what is who they can love and how that love needs to look like. So part of the Week of Action was spent on understanding laws and policies, understanding root causes, and then finishing looking at what strategies we're going to pursue in this third year so that folks who feel, right? A lot of us feel this is bad, this is sad, this is ugly, this isn't fair. How do we turn those feelings into concrete actions such that the people who are in power, who have tools right now that could make this right, are choosing not to do so, how we can get to those people so that this family can be put back together, so that then we can carry this work to the broader scale.
And Carly, after this Week of Action, are you feeling a renewed sense of hope that maybe there can be some sort of positive resolution to this case?
Well, hope definitely means a lot different to me now than it used to. Mm-hmm. But seeing the new support from people, I know that we'll continue to gather the support from our community and others around us. I am hopeful.
Well, Carly Garcia, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I wish the best of luck to you and to Alex.
Thank you.
And Sarah John, Executive Director of the St. Louis Interfaith Committee on Latin America, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. We have put additional resources up on our website. So if folks are feeling like they want to support Carly and Alex or looking for ways to get involved, they can certainly find that at stl-ifcla.org.
Okay, and we will also make sure to have that on our website, which is stlpublicradio.org. Podcast episodes of St. Louis on the Air are available at stlpublicradio.org, or you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, the Stitcher Podcast app, or wherever you get your podcasts. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Evie Hempel and Lara Hamden, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr. The senior producer is Emily Woodbury, and the executive producer is Alex Hoyer. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. That's 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Sarah Fenske.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.